They are homes of happy, innocent, and active little beings, who are destined to perform great good for humanity. The dwellers upon these three islands of the sea mingle freely together, for they love each other. When the children of these islands have studied a certain lesson, or practiced a particular work for a little time, they are permitted to change their attention to some other interesting labor, or to find recreation in some pastime that is pleasant to them. This is so that their minds and bodily powers will not become wearied, and that their duties may not become distasteful to them. These little folks are provided with all the appliances necessary for their health and enjoyment. They have boats, swings, broken barreal cars, and other conveniences for their amusement. Musical instruments abound, and many of the pupils are fine vocalists. The children laugh, shout, romp, plash in the water, and act generally as do the children of Earth when bent upon having a good time. They never push nor injure each other in any way, because the first lesson they learn in this school, and one they never forget, is gentleness to one another and love to all people. Wherever there are children in the Summerland, no matter what the name of their home, whether it be Fairy Nest or Happy Valley, Golden Nest, Rocky Nook, or Sunny Isle, will be found beautiful sights and sweet sounds, for the expression of childhood is beauty, and in heavenly life the little spirits are provided with the surroundings and conditions that harmonize with their own interior life. The methods of instruction at the different homes may vary, but all are calculated to perform their work well and faithfully. Every child in the Summerland is taught that labor is ennobling, and all are anxious to learn some branch of employment. They love to work, for they know that true happiness is found in activity, and as each is allowed to follow the especial pursuit which pleases him or her best, and to choose what it shall be, all are contented in their occupation. The child on earth who is busy leaping, running, shouting, using its limbs, is happy, while the little one who is obliged to remain quiet or be idle is sad, discontented, and miserable. This shows that idleness is unnatural, and that activity is the true condition of life. In the Summerland, the natural is always allowed to have free and full expression. Now, my little friends, if you do not understand what I tell you about these things, please ask your kind mother or father to explain it to you, for I wish you to gain a clear comprehension of the real, natural, and beautiful manner in which the children of the spirit world live, study and amuse themselves, so that you may think of them as busy little workers who are as alive and active as yourselves. The occupations of these young residents of the higher life, and also their studies, are various, but whatever each undertakes to learn to do is accomplished with earnestness and by diligence. We have no dull scholars, because all delight to study, and we have no loitering idlers, because each takes pleasure in practicing or experimenting in some line of labor for themselves. Our young folks are students of astronomy, following the movements of planets and seeking for knowledge of the solar system, or the grand universe of stars, with eager interest, of chemistry, gaining information of the various elements and their combinations, from day to day, of the electrical forces in nature, and the laws that control them, and, indeed, we have with us pupils in every branch of science, as well as philosophy, who are charmed with their studies and take them up with commendable zeal. We have also scholars pursuing the branches of education embraced by algebraic numbers, geometry, architecture, form and design, and other practical studies, while many of our children, when their minds are sufficiently matured, adopt the study of medicine, and enter the field of magnetism to follow their chosen pursuits, for there are many sick and feeble mortals, and many ill-formed spirits, who require the care and assistance of magnetic doctors, and here is a grand work for those who are adapted for it. So you see, my friends, the lives of the children in the Summerland are busy, useful, and earnest. These little ones have all the amusement and recreation they desire, while they find an incentive to study or work in the joy they feel when they have mastered their lesson or accomplished their labor. They have no time to quarrel or to be discontented, and are always happy. Hahit, Part 3. Chapter 20. John Critchley Prince. His experiences in the spirit world. The chapters that follow contain a recital of the spiritual experiences of John Critchley Prince, The Poetical Control of the Medium, which first appeared in the columns of The Voice of Angels, and elicited warm expressions of commendation and approval from the pens of a number of writers. The name of Prince is well known in England, for his poems have long held a place in the affections of his countrymen, but as he speaks of his earthly life and labors in the first portion of his narrative of experiences, we will not anticipate what is the stated. It may be well to mention how Spirit Prince happened to become attracted to Miss Shelema, and to find in her organism elements that so assimilated with certain ones of his own as to render her a fitting instrument for the transmission of his thought to mortals, and we will give the explanation in his own words, as published in The Voice of November 1, 1878, I feel that I owe it to the public to explain my presence here, and how I first happened to control this medium. In early life, comparatively speaking, I met with the present chairman of the Voice of Angels Circle, an old friend, Mr. Robert Anderson, of Morpeth, England, himself somewhat of a poet, and one possessed of a mind competent to criticize, admire, or condemn the productions of poetical souls. He became somewhat interested in me in those early days, at Ashton-on-the-Lyne, England, and we formed a spiritual affinity that has survived physical separation, and even death itself. We lost sight of each other, but after my first experiences in spirit life I determined to visit America. By the law of spiritual affinity I was attracted to a circle held by this medium, then a girl in her teens. My old-time friend, Robert Anderson, who had long been a resident of Boston, and had become interested in the revealments of spiritualism, discovering mediumistic qualities in his own being, that enabled him to perceive and to converse with spirits, was present at that circle. The links of sympathy formally binding us together immediately revealed themselves, and I gave him spirit greeting. Since that time, some 6 years ago, I have been a frequent visitor to this home, meeting my old friend and holding social converse with him. I do not always need to control the medium for that purpose, for he is both clairvoyant and clairaudient, and it sometimes pleases me to enter the sphere of his spiritual aura and converse with him in a Lancashire dialect, which seems to recall old associations to our minds. Mr. Prince refers above to the spirit greeting he gave his friend Mr. Anderson, who had for many years held a devoted friendship for the parents of Miss Shelema, the medium, and who was ever a welcome visitor in their home, upon his first appearance from the higher life. This greeting was expressed in verse, and appears below. The recipient of this poetical tribute was highly gratified as well as astonished at the production, for he recognized in its composition the well-remembered style of his old friend Prince, as well as quotations from a poem written by the spirit author in England many years before he passed from the body, and which had never appeared in print in this country. The poem thus delivered is entitled, I Come to Thee. When evening shadows lightly fall, and earth is wrapped in holy peace, when over cottage roof and wall the sounds of toil and revel cease, I come to thee. When in the fair and cloudless skies the golden stars their vigils keep, like countless hosts of angel eyes that guard the world while hushed in sleep, I come to thee. Not when the roses climb the wall, and sweetly scent the balmy breeze, not when the joyous songs of birds make music through the leafy trees, I come to thee. When the earth is nobly ruled five by winter's weird, majestic reign, when moonlit snow is on the roof, and pictured frost is on the pane, six I come to thee. Not when earth's fair and sunny morn hath bathed thee in its mellow glow, but when upon thy honored head descends life's winter's driven snow, I come to thee. From fairy lands, whose silvery gleams stream oft across thy earthly way, where life more fair than picture dreams glows with the light of perfect day, I come to thee. To speak of that eternal shore where gently beat the waves of time, where zephyrs chant their sweet refrain, and life is even more sublime, I come to thee. To strew before thy weary feet the roses of eternal love, to plant the lily bud of peace, transplanted from the world above, I come to thee, from fairy lands beyond the tomb, where flowers of truth forever bloom, to guide thy soul through realms of love to fairer, sunnier climes above, I come to thee. And when thy pilgrim feet have trod the starry road that leads to God, when thou hast reached the shining strand and angels clasp thee by the hand, I'll come to thee, to greet thee once again with joy, unmixed with sorrow's dark alloy, to sing the songs of sweet accord, to teach thee of the living word, I'll come to thee. Footnote 5. The poem was given in midwinter. Footnote 6. Quotation from one of his early poems. A few weeks after the production of the above, the spirit author presented his friend with the following poetic effusion, A. Heart Treasures. Earth may yield her sordid treasures, A. Purest silver, gold, and gems, A. Fit to crown a kingly forehead with their royal diadems. Man may point to forms of beauty, rarest works of skillful art, but he cannot find the equal of the treasures of the heart. Oh, the human heart is glowing with the gems of truth and love, flashing in the radiant splendor of their coronal above, flashing in their wondrous glory through the clouds of doubts and fears, gems whose lights shall never tarnish in the mists of future years. See the gold of pure affection, twice refined and purified. Gaze on sympathy's white silver, linked together, side by side. Mark the shrine of honest friendship, rarest work of heavenly art, and compare thy earthly treasures with the treasures of the heart. Oh, the human heart holds truly mines of beauty, a wealth untold, a richer than earth's fairest jewels, brighter than earth's shining gold, glorious forms of smiling beauty fill each recess of the heart, fairer than the sculptor's model that begems the world of art. Oh, the heart itself's a jewel hid within these forms of clay, flashing in its radiant splendor with the light of perfect day, through the crust of human weakness, through the slough of human shame, burning with the light eternal of affection's sacred flame. Hear this wondrous, precious jewel I this evening bring to you, shining with unfading luster, burning steadfast, calm, and true, set within the crown of glory of infinitude above, whose eternal anthems ringing tell of friendship, truth, and love. The spirit, John Critchley Prince, has inspired his medium with a great number of poems, many of which have been published in the Banner of Light, Voice of Angels, and other spiritual and secular journals, and he proposes to have them gathered into book form, to be published as a volume of poetic gems sometime in the future. The following, selected from this mass of poems, are given as specimens of the poetical work this spirit has accomplished in connection with his medium A, and he will make it plain. The path of life seems dark and drear to mortals toiling on through heavy clouds of doubt and fear, and mists of sin and wrong, for through the shadows of despair we often seek in vain for light to pierce the tangled maze, and make its meaning plain. Dear souls are groping in the dark, and longing for the day, who cannot see the lines of truth along life's beaten way, and spirits, hopeless and forlorn, whose teardrops fall like rain, wait anxiously the coming time when he will make it plain. We cannot find the tangled end, so blindly do we seek, we stumble o'er the rugged path, with steps grown faint and weak, we cannot make the crooked straight, nor light the darkened road. Nor can we ease our aching hearts of all their weary load, and so we totter on our way, and cannot comprehend the meaning of life's mysteries, and how each one shall end, why hearts should ache and spirits bleed, and faint beneath the rod, till, in their agony of need, they cry to thee, O God. Above the clouds that darkly lower the sun is shining bright, and through the spirit's saddest hour the soul gains strength and might. We may not find the comforter for all our woe or pain, yet God is the interpreter, and he will make it plain. Oh, saddened hearts! Oh, stricken souls! Who long for peace and rest, the Father's love about you rolls, and that will make you blessed. Infinitude can never err, its mysteries he'll explain, a God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. Dear teachers of the living word, whose souls are bathed in light, with every impulse nobly stirred to battle for the right, to you belief can never err, nor scan his works in vain, for God is your interpreter, and he hath made it plain. O Father, God, to thee we pray for strength to do thy will, and as we journey on our way, fulfill thy purpose still, and through all weakness may we join the angels' sweet refrain, a God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. Down by the sea. Down by the sea, the gleaming sands forever beckon to the waves, the seagull flits along the shore or nestles in its rocky caves. The billows chant their sweet refrain of life forever grand and free, and deep-toned harmonies repeat their mystic rhythms to the sea. Down by the sea the morning breaks, and all the eastern sky is bright with shining radiance that wakes the world in rapture to the sight, and riding on to burning noon the golden sun in splendor beams upon the dimpling, glistening waves, half wrapped in soft, delicious dreams. Down by the sea the western sky is all aglow with rosy light, the fiery monarch sinks to rest in wrapped in fleecy garments bright, and out upon the crystal waves the sunset's rainbowed, tinted dyes reflect their glories to the soul, and charm it with a glad surprise. Down by the sea of the glorious sea we watch the white-sailed vessels glide, bearing their messages of cheer far out upon the silvery tide, the shining waves caress the sand, and softly lie upon its breast, while all the happy peaceful sea bespeaks the calm of holy rest. Down by the sea there sometimes comes a mighty current strong and deep that sweeps along the rolling tide, and wakes the waters from their sleep, the great green waves with snowy crests come grandly rushing wild and free, revealing depths of untold power, down by the rolling, matchless sea. Down by the sea the love of God we feel in every breath we draw, we listen to his mighty tones in silent, reverential awe, the air is all alive with thoughts of him who rules both sea and land, and holds the deeply flowing tides within the hollow of his hand. Coming home. Drawing nearer to the portals of the angels' happy home, lonely hearted sighing mortals in their strength or weakness come now their white sails in the distance, gleaming on life's open sea, catch a breath from heavenly breezes richly scented, warm and free. Heavy clouds have gathered o'er them, storms and tempests sometimes fell, driving every sail before them, through the water's angry swell, till again the morning's splendor bursts in triumph o'er each deck, lighting up with touches tender every trace of storm and wreck. Seamed and patched, and wearing traces of temptation's cruel power, are the weary, pallid faces of the voyagers this hour, but a gleam of tender sweetness falls upon them as they glide nearer to the full completeness of their home beyond the tide, on and on in stormy weather, or when summer sunbeams fall, till they enter port together at the quiet boatman's call. Raise the strain, O, souls immortal, in one chorus sweet and grand, as ye gain the heavenly portal of Feridun's morning land. Spirit Prince found that on certain occasions he could inspire his old friend Anderson with the poetic fire that thrilled and characterized his own being. The following poem is one that this intelligence delivered through the mediumship of that gentleman, and is introduced here to show the evident kinship of the production with some of those delivered through the mediumship of Miss Shella Murray, a friend's advice. Allow me, my friend, a friend's privilege to drop a few words in your ear. You have lived a long time in the mortal, and wrought foolish things, I much fear, but the summer of life is not ended, and its fruits may be gathered, you know, by all who will act on this maxim, water and weed as you go. The field of this life is a broad one, and much precious seed has been sown, some of it's crushed by the wild weeds, and some of it's covered with stone. It needs all the care and attention that mortals can give it, I know, so take my advice, and be careful to water and weed as you go. The frost and the snow of the winter, the sun's rays are melting away, bringing a sight of the wildwood, and the beautiful flowers of May, teaching us all the importance to look to the seed that we sow, and mind well the lesson I've told you, water and weed as you go. The spring will be here with its promise, and speak from the green-covered sod, in flowers that show by their splendor the manifold wisdom of God. O, man, heed the lesson they teach thee, that life from the Father doth flow, so make it as pure as the flowers, and water and weed as you go. The fruitage will come in its season, a reward for your toil and your care. Then see that those in the shadow a part of your harvest shall share. This is the voice of the Spirit to brothers and sisters below. Be sure, while you dwell in the mortal, to water and weed as you go. Shortly after the physical decease of that grand man, William Lloyd Garrison, John Critchley Prince wrote the following sketch, A through the instrumentality of his regular medium, A which was published in The Voice of Angels, June 15, 1879, and afterward copied into Mind and Matter, A, The Welcome Angels Give. I have recently had the good fortune to witness a scene, the impressiveness and grandeur of which only those who are unencumbered by the corporeal body, and who are all spirit, all sense, all perception, can fully realize. This scene was the spirit reception. The angelic welcome given to one of life's noblest heroes, one of the whitest, grandest souls that has ever trod the pathway of mortal existence. And though I cannot hope to convey to earth other than a faint portrayal of the scene, yet I will attempt in this instance to give my readers some idea of the welcome angels give. After more than the 70 years and 10 of earthly existence and experience, William Lloyd Garrison, the friend of the oppressed, the defender of right, the champion of freedom, calmly, quietly, and peacefully laid down the burden of mortality, and rising, grand, majestic, free, a spirit filled with power, passed into the realms of eternal light, in company with a band of kindred spirits, among whom I may mention my friend Robert Burns, Felicia Hemans, and Elizabeth B. Browning, a noble souls all, who had wept tears of sadness over the oppressed, even while tuning their harps to sweet a melody for freedom's sake. I was privileged to witness a spirit reception given to this ascended hero, not the greeting given by the nearest and dearest of their heart, that was too sacred for even the eyes of sympathizing spirit friends, who had no claim upon his love, but the meeting of kindred souls, who had trod the same paths of truth, waded the same seas of opposition and danger, and borne the same battle flag of freedom onto victory. Not alone was the spirit of William Lloyd Garrison surrounded by departed friends of his own country, not alone were his hands pressed by such moral heroes as Washington, Adams, Lincoln, Andrew, Sumner, and many more noble souls, men and women of his own country, but the Earl Lafayette, Lamartine, Wilberforce, Wilcoxon, George Thompson, Harriet Martineau, and countless others, assembled to give their brother greeting. Indeed, all the great reformers of every age and clime, whose souls now watch from the battlements of heaven the advancement of liberty and truth on earth, and who still have a hand in shaping the events of interest to humanity, were gathered to give our friend and the friend of every man, though the foe to all tyranny, persecution, and slavery, a perfect ovation, expressed through love, sympathy, and blessings. But the most beautiful was the sight of John Brown, brave old Osawatomie, whose soul continues to march on, and Charles Sumner, whose spirit still toils for a recognition of the equality of all before the law, seated at the feet of Mr. Garrison, and looking up to him as to some beloved teacher and guide. Confined by no limits, unrestrained by the confines of walls and barriers, out in the clear and pleasant sunshine, fanned by the balmy breeze, refreshed through every avenue of sense by the perfume of flowers, the gleam of waters, and the songs of birds, the very poetry of expression. The nectar of loving sympathy gushed from the fountain of each soul, and formed a sea of light which glorified the soul of him who felt its genial, life-imparting flow. You who are in sympathy with great minds, in harmony with all souls earnest for the emancipation of humanity from whatever enthralls and keeps it down, can conceive faintly at best of the grandeur, the beauty, and the joy of such a meeting. Countless numbers of gifted, noble souls assembled to give welcome, and to pay tribute to one beloved apostle of truth. No pen, no tongue can do the subject justice. Outside of the circle of light formed by this celestial company, awed by its brilliancy, surprised by its glory, debarred from enjoying its feast of soul communion because of the remorseless memories within them, I observed a number of faces, faces stamped with the signet of genius as well as intellect, but bearing the impress of infidelity to truth, faces belonging to gifted but ignoble spirits who, when upon earth, stood in high places and publicly denounced the spirits of liberty, of toleration and justice. Today they are repenting for the life spent in ambitious desires. But this is not all. Coming up from every direction, together and in great numbers, I observed spirits approaching, from the tiny, toddling child to the aged grandsire, singing songs of welcome as they came, the celestial melody of which echoed and re-echoed throughout the spheres, producing a perfect flood of heavenly sweetness that thrilled the soul with ecstasy. It was a song of gratitude, a mighty PA tilde broken bar and of praise, a universal strain of blessing for deliverance, and as it gathered power and rolled on in musical splendor, the sweetness of its tones, the beauty of its expressions, the grandeur of its inspiration clustered and fell in a cascade of divine harmony over and around the soul of him enthroned in our midst, the object of our gathering, the central glory of our galaxy, William Lloyd Garrison. On they came, bearing branches of green and waving palms, garlands of beautiful and odorous blossoms, a profusion of snowy white lilies, and clusters of royal roses, to strew before his spirit feet. But sweeter than all other gifts, and dearer far to him who beheld and received them, were the smiles of affection, the tears of gratitude, the whispered blessings showered upon him by these newcomers. The vanguard of this hero, they who were once poor and depressed, scorned, uneducated, and despised, the slaves of tyranny, and used as beasts of burden, but who are now cultured, honored, free. A toilers for the redemption of souls from bondage. First kneeling before their benefactor came the poor, despised Negroes, with hands uplifted in blessing, lips mute from the excess of emotion, eyes eloquent with joy and gratitude. Not only those who had become free before the law while yet on earth, but also those who had died in chains and beneath the lash, came with benedictions for this man who had done so much for their race, and to receive a blessing from his soul, knowing it would impart to them strength, inspiration, and courage. Following these came hosts of others, men, women, and children, of every race and color, those who had felt the hand of tyranny, injustice, and oppression in some one or more of its many shapes. Red and white, the North American Indian and the Russian serf, delicate women, who had suffered in homes made unhappy by intemperance or by the cruelty of tyrannical brutality, all came to bless this good man as their benefactor and friend, and their presence brought a joy to his spirit no mortal can understand. Turning earthward, we perceived great billows of golden light, waves of roseate beauty, clouds of azure and snowy brightness ascending, until they enveloped our guest with their fragrant splendor, irradiating his whole being with a new brilliancy, a new loveliness of expression. Each wave of light that thus arose expressed to us from its peculiar hue and its own delicate aroma the emotion which it represented. The golden hue symbolized truth and earnestness, the roseate love and sympathy, the azure fidelity and gratitude, and the white purity and peace. We perceived these auras mingling and blending together into beautiful harmony, and flowing out from hearts encased in mortal, who, though saddened at the decease of Mr. Garrison, yet sent out after his ascended spirit love, sympathy and blessings. From the colored people assembled to pay their tribute of love and respect to his memory, from the hearts of earnest women, who speak in solemn sweetness of his helpfulness and cheer, from the souls of good men and women everywhere, who loved and honored him, from the soul of that silver-tongued friend Seven, and orator who dares to stand forth and pay honest, just, and loving tribute as a fitting eulogy to his departed friend, from the pure and loving heart of that peaceful poet Solate, who sings in rhymed sweetness the honor of his friend semicolon nay from all these ascended those emanations of light and beauty and fragrance. Musical with the silvery sweetness born from the souls of friends on earth, they bathed his spirit in a fount of eternal joy and blessing. Footnote 7, Wendell Phillips. Footnote 8, John G. Whittier. What need of golden harps and streets of pearl? He treads the flowery paths of spirit life, not idle, not basking in dreamless rest.